This is the Grow Strategist Radio Show, the peer-to-peer program for executives of mid-sized companies. All comments, views, and opinions are solely those of the host, guests, and callers. It's time for the Grow Strategist Radio Show, and here's your host, Aldona Ambler.
Welcome to the show. This is the Grow Strategist with Aldona Ambler. And we rotate through different growth strategies, geographic locations, and industries each week. And this is a peer-to-peer-to-peer program where the host and the guests and the listeners are all presidents or CEOs of mid-sized companies. Most of us are in that $20 million range. A second group is about the $50 million range. Third group's at about 10. I think that's an interesting mix there. And the fourth group of people listening to this, your division heads of large corporations. So that's absolutely fascinating. This month I'm inviting those division heads of corporations to email me, call me, do something. Tell me what you're thinking. Tell me what you're looking for. That you're logging on to a program that's for mid-sized companies is intriguing to all of us. Are you ready to bolt from the big corporations and become one of us? Or do you see yourselves as entrepreneurs and this is where you're finding your kindred spirits and you're not finding it within the companies? We're all dying to know what's drawing you to this. So one of the things I'm doing this quarter, because this is our seventh year in doing this program, is I've gone back to some of the more interesting guests that I've had on in the past and asked, you know, give us an update. We want to know what you're doing now. And that's what this show is about. And I'm particularly focused on how have people developed their people? How have CEOs of successful companies through all the turmoil of the last few years developed a star staff and retained them? And can they get out of their own way? Can they delegate? Can they not become the bottleneck? And think about it. If you were on the program in 2005, since that time, you know, there's been implosion of the financial markets. There's been this lingering recession and periods of uncertainty. There's all these different kinds of wars. There's changes in political climate. There's the unrest and whatever you want to call it in the Middle East. There's a lot going on and tremendous advances in technology. So how does somebody who's trying to grow a business, a mid-sized company in particular, what do they do with their business model? What do they do with financing? What do they do with innovation, et cetera? And the primary thing we'll be talking about today is to develop the employees so your company's not so dependent on a few top people. All right, so one of the things that I've noticed, let me open up the program before I interview our guests, is what I just said. I'd like to give a little bit of a, teleseminar, a couple of rules of thumb, things that I'm seeing. Been in business since, you know, 71, so I have seen four recessions now. So there's a few things I keep seeing. And the first thing I want you to hear is, in developing the people side of things, is that during recessions, and particularly when in these lingering, they call it a tail, an extended tail of indecision and worry and uncertainty following recessions, one of the things that happens is that really good people, star employees, the ones that could be very productive, they're trapped behind indecisive bosses. Think about it. A key star is working for a company and the president's waiting for some financing to happen. Or the president isn't deciding to, you know, innovate, isn't going after some new markets and technologies. Can you imagine what it's like to work for someone like that? Or they're waiting for a merger to happen, or they're waiting for the government to do something. The operative word is waiting. So stars who are behind an exec whose primary strategy is to just work harder and wait, how demoralizing is that? So frankly, there's a lot of otherwise star behavior, star people that could be fabulous, trapped behind some indecisive execs. So if you don't have some excitement in your organization, if you don't have star behavior, the first thing to look at is whether or not you're being indecisive, if you're adding to the problem of the recession. What are you waiting for? If you're waiting for the government to rescue you, all they're going to do is have more debt. If you're waiting for somebody to figure out financing, if you're not proposing anything, no bank, no anybody is going to be giving you money. You follow it? So if you find the first place to look, and always is this, is that mirror, star behavior lights up when a leader is doing something, when there's something to follow, when there's a place you're going. So take a look at your own business strategy. If your primary business strategy has become just work harder and wait for something to change, that's not real exciting. And then the second thing about what I just said, if you're looking at your team and you're excited and you're on a roll and you have looked at your strategy, you're doing something hot, you're going somewhere, You're making a difference. You've got innovation. Your company is really cool, and you've never felt younger. And then you look behind you, the cool people that had the resume, they had the pedigree, they're bright, but something's missing. Let me remind you that there are stars that are trapped behind indecisive employers. Bringing in a few stars to your team to light it up again, to wake them up, to, you know, put people on notice that you're serious, that you're going to be growing this business. Maybe they just need some infusion of newness. They need some brightness around them. There's an energy level. We're all in the same industry of managing energy. You know, some of us are in IT, some of us are in retail, and some of us are in manufacturing. But I got to tell you, we're all in the same industry when it comes to people. It's all about energy management. So if it doesn't look like you have stars behind you, they're out there trapped behind indecisive execs. So there's a recruitment technique. Tell your search people, tell people that you know. Look for the whiners. Look for the presidents of what could be great companies who are still complaining. When they go to play golf, they're whining about the economy. When they're talking over dinner, they're still complaining about the government. When they're talking at a cocktail party, these idiots are stupid enough to actually talk negatively. Look for presidents who are whining about how bad it is, and business is tough, and they have to be careful, and they can't get money, and cherry-pick their stars from behind them. Obviously, they don't deserve them anyway. They're going to lose them at some point. Why wait till somebody's star behavior atrophies before you recruit it? Rescue some talent from your competitors who aren't doing the right thing with it anyway. Add them to your team so that you can take off. That's just one reminder. And true wealth is made during recessions. And a lot of it is about an attitude of what does your company do to be distinctive and how do you have that perseverance when somebody else is sitting around complaining and waiting. All right, so I want to introduce our guests because they've really exhibited the kind of attitude I'm talking about. They're going to continue. They're going to be winners. What I love about these guys, in addition to all their other awards, is that they're constantly in the lists of the best places to work in New Jersey. They were in the top five best workplaces to work in New Jersey in 2010 and 2011. Ta-da. So I want to ask, Venkat, you there?
Yes, Elena. How are you?
Okay, I'm going to introduce Venkat Urabundi and Bot Dittakavi. You there, Bot?
I am there, Aldona.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I have two guys because these guys are really innovative. These are co-CEOs of Edixoft Solutions. And just make sure that everybody understands what your company does. When you think about like cloud computing and data management and business-to-business intelligence, et cetera, these are the guys that are in that arena. And their company has grown to that $32 million run rate, and they've got 350 employees. And I love it when they say they've had slow linear growth. No. They might have had linear growth, but it isn't slow. You know, they're winning a bunch of awards, and they're on the move, and this is the place to work. So congratulations, guys, and welcome back.
Thanks to our employees.
Yeah, I figured you probably credit that. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you back on the radio is this whole idea of the two of you were very dominant, obviously, in the business, and over a period of time, you've become mentors, and you've gotten out of your own way and let people grow. So that's going to be the focus of the show, but I want to ask some other kinds of questions first so we frame it. Is that all right? I'll ask each of you to take turns answering so we know who's going to talk. They're in different rooms, so it's hard for them. Okay, so Bot, how about you first? What I want you to tell me about is, in the last few years, how has the business model of your company changed?
Wonderful question. In the last few years, we have made ourselves intentionally detached from the business, out of transactions, day to day, in and out. We wanted our team members, we wanted our mid-level management to succeed by daring to fail, by learning from their own mistakes. And we are there to mentor them and guide them, but we want them to really have the full control with our vigilance, with our from the above vigilance, not from being in their vigilance.
So now, is that something you knew from the beginning, or as you got to a certain size, did you realize you needed to shift?
The second part. We were not doing this from the day one. We have always been having that attitude of I do it best. within few years into the business, thank God we have transparency as our core value, wherein not only we are open to give feedback, our employees and our staff is open to give us feed forward. So in the process, we realized we got to let them do what they're supposed to do and give them the complete freedom. And past 5 years has been phenomenal in that aspect, that they are doing it for the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a culture of people are feeling like this is an extended family, do you not? Venkat, one of the things I've heard in our rehearsals has been, you know, they're not all related to one another, but somehow you've intentionally said, okay, this is an extended family. We know each other. We're in this together. How do you do that?
Alana, first of all, I want to thank and congratulate all our employees for ranking VedicSoft as the number one best places to work in New Jersey for year 2010.
Isn't
so we just learned about this award actually last week, and we won this.
Is it really? Well, I didn't know you got it. Oh, that's great. I knew you were in the top five.
Yes, yes. So that's, you know, we were actually pretty happy because this is the ranking by the employees for the employees, and we are really, really elated to hear this news. So
It's more than exciting, because when some people have awards, it might have been they did one thing right. When you get best place to work, you had to do a lot right.
That's true. That's true. So that's why this particular award is so special. Going back to your question, you know, how to actually, you know, employees and what we are doing for them.
Yeah. How did you do that? How did you deserve that best place to work award? How did you do that?
I think, you know, we discovered the DNA of any business, and we really took care of that DNA, which is actually people. So it's all about people in this business. It's all about, you know, your employees. It's all about your suppliers. It's all about your clients. And so, you know, whatever anybody may say, it all boils down to just person-to-person interaction. If we could tap into that potential, if we could take care of employees well, the employees will take care of you. I think, you know, once we realize
this. Give me an example of something that you do to take care of your employees that you find your competitors don't do, or other employers that you've talked to don't do. Let's be specific.
Okay.
What do you do that they don't
first
do?
Of all, first of all, you know, we. It's all about the way we treat employees, whether it is, you know, taking care of their needs, taking care of their requests. Let's say, let me give it probably this way. We actually have Friday lunches every Friday lunch here in New Jersey, and we also have daily lunches in our offshore entity in India. We have multiple outings in a given year. We have a winter outing where we bring together all the employees and our clients together at one place, and we actually have fun. And we also felicitate each and every employee that contributed to the company and that stayed with the company that actually grew the business. So it's all about employee felicitation. And we also find each and every reason to celebrate each and every achievement of any employee, whether it is, you know, they surpassing a milestone, they achieving a milestone in a particular project, or whether it is their birthdays or anniversaries. One interesting thing is we try to make it make them actually engaged. One particular okay. I'll give probably another example.
Good.
Whenever any employee leaves, typically companies provide farewell lunches. And During one farewell lunch way back in 2004-2005, we noticed that all you talk about is, you know, the positives and the best things about a particular employee. And the particular employee said, "Oh, had I known all these things, I would have stayed with VedicSoft longer."
Yeah.
That
isn't
actually
it amazing? As somebody's leaving, they hear all the positives.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we made it a point to celebrate somebody's anniversary every year. They stayed with the company for 1 year. Okay, throw a party or call for a meeting and talk about the person's contribution to the company and talk all positives, whatever you like about that particular person, and do the same thing on the second year, do the same thing on the third year. And now employees are looking forward to those anniversary meetings. They
have 350 employees. Are you doing a party a day?
Almost. I wouldn't really call like a party, but it's more like a conference call wherein everybody talks about the positives, about the contributions, and what they learned from that particular employee, the positives, and what kind of positive impact the particular person had on them.
Does it become like John Doe Day? Like Aldona Ambler's birthday is in July, so July 18th is Aldona Ambler Day, and you start talking about why you like her and what she did to the company and why we're grateful she's here.
Exactly, that's what we do.
Cool.
So we also send a greeting card and for other achievements we also send the gift baskets or the flower baskets or the cookie baskets, whatever they are. We find reasons to celebrate. So whether it is a birthday, whether it is an anniversary, whether it is somebody's 1 year stay with the company or 2 year stay with the company or personal milestones. We find reasons to celebrate.
Yeah, one of the things I want to say in here, go back to the opening of the program. I said, all right, now think about all those stars that are out there, really neat, capable people, and they're behind a boring boss or someone who doesn't appreciate or never would notice your anniversary or never would say anything positive. Of course you can recruit. If your employees are having this buzz that, the people at VedicSoft have, where, you're being celebrated, you're being thanked, and there's special days and conference calls that are thanking you for what, basically, quote, doing your job, that's a much better place to work than, just being ignored. So, yeah, you can recruit folks. I mean, just having – it's funny. Some people would look at these guys as they're just looking for an excuse to party. But why not? I mean, work can be fun, and you can be excited about the employees, and it means it's easier to recruit. Yeah. Do you do you get a lot of resumes across your desk every day or every week?
Definitely to the HR, not to my desk. And HR would definitely have a lot of resumes coming in, and we would carefully screen them. Mm-hmm. And we always, when we hire, we look for somebody with positive attitude. You rightly said.
Yeah.
You don't want to hire the whiners. And mm-hmm. if you can, at best, find the people with positive energy. That is what really works in servant leadership. You can't be servant to your whiner. Well, because our attitude in the business is servant leadership. And we make sure we hire people smarter than us. We make sure we hire people who are having a lot of positivity. And it works for us.
That makes sense. Now, I'm going to take a break, and we're going to go back to, I want to go to these core values that you have, because that seems like a secret to your success. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldona Ambler. We'll be right back.
It pays to listen to The Growth Strategist if you are an executive running a mid-sized company. As the CEO of a $75 million business, I like to listen to the first segment of each show when Aldona Ambler provides practical advice about the growth strategy of the week. There's no fluff in her interviews. Her guests are all presidents or CEOs of companies between $20 million and $200 million a year. Aldona's candid interviewing style reveals how they executed their ESOP, made their acquisitions work, timed their initial public offering, or obtained growth financing. Aldona Ambler's show helps bring out the growth strategists in us.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. And today we're talking about growing your business through these uncertain times by a really like a laser focus on developing your people. So you get out of your way, you're not the bottleneck, you're excited about your successful team and some of the secrets to doing that. So I found a company that I've been excited about. They just found out they're number one best place to work in New Jersey. And we got a lot of companies here. This is a densely populated state. This is quite the comment. This is really hot. So Vetixoft Solutions, congratulations. That's wonderful. And Bot Vitakavi and Venkat Yuravundi are on the line with us. And Bot, I want to add, they're co-CEOs, by the way, so that's another kind of a cultural statement about who these guys are. Now, one of the things I'm intrigued by, Bot, is you guys talk about values a lot, and there's four key values of transparency, family, technical leadership, and happiness. Did I hear you right?
Yep. It's culture of leadership.
Okay, so now tell me what you mean, because some people say those phrases. They say transparency, and then they don't show any employees anything about the finances. What do you mean by transparency?
Transparency is, for example, to attract talent. To attract talent, many employers may come and say, hey, we offer you this, we deliver you this, these are the benefits and everything. And in the end, after they moved in, they find it disappointing that not all the promised got delivered. We are not that company. We don't promise big. We deliver what we promise. That is what I'm calling your transparency. And
when you say deliver what you promise, what do you promise your employees when you're recruiting them?
When you're recruiting them?
Yeah. I mean, what would you promise to a new employee?
We promise them to be transparent. We promise them to be joining a well-knit family, and we promise them to be adding value to them, because when they exit the company, they're going to be far better than when they walked in. They're going to get addition of technical skills, addition of soft skills, and addition of broader experience in nationwide horizontal industries.
You know, you're right. I have heard that from other companies before. Do you find your new employees are a little skeptical and saying, yeah, right?
They, you know what? I'll tell you with this. We always bring employees with word of mouth referrals. It's very easy to have an employee, happy employee, be a happy camper of the company, and then bring his own friend Arik in, or his colleague or whatever you name it. And in that way, they're not going to say, you're right. They know it. They're getting
it
directly from their friend.
Yeah. I mean, if you've proven it, you know, and they say, look, this is why I work there. So leave this knucklehead that you've been working for and come work in the same place I am. There's still some skepticism now. I noticed that, you know, the distrust and skepticism's higher during this kind of recession. So I'd imagine if a friend didn't bring them in, they kind of look at you like, you sure? Is this real? So it takes a while for them to believe it. But if you're transparent, you're transparent, you're transparent. And, you know, that kind of faith happens. Well, Venkat, I asked you a little bit about how do you create family. How do you follow through on the promise that they're going to be ahead of technology, continue to learn, they're going to be brighter than when they came in? How do you guys institutionalize that and make that true?
Okay. Before I go to that point, I would like to just add another point to the transparency. Most of our employees, depending on the depending on the seniority, depending on the offer that we have with them, they know how much we actually charge for a particular project or how much the client is paying. And similarly, there are some clients of us that actually dictate how much we should be paying to a particular employee of what they're paying us. So if they are paying us, let's say, if they are paying us, $100, they demand that, some amount, a particular portion of that should be paid to the employee. And all this is in front of the employee and all this is in front of the client. So they know you know, what we are getting, and they know what they should be getting. Mm-hmm. And as Bart said, they know exactly what they're getting into. And most of the hires that actually more than 95% of our hires are through the word of mouth. So when we have, you know, 300 people working here and 100 people working in India, the new employees keep coming to us just by word of mouth. You know, whenever you're trying to hire a new employee, more than 30%, more than 40% of the hiring process involves breaking barriers. You know, they have certain doubts, and you have to you have to answer them. And they ask, there is, you know, certain skepticism, and you have to break through that, and you have to gain their trust. And fortunately for us, this 40% or 50% of the hiring process is already done by our existing employees.
A lot of your competitors hire, not really hire, they do subcontracting. So let's take that transparency about what people are paid. If somebody's a subcontractor and they have all the marketing and sales and their own materials and all that kind of responsibility, they get a higher percentage of the dollar, you know, or, you know what I mean? They feel like as freelancers they're worth more per hour. When somebody's an employee and you have all the marketing and sales and supervision and legal requirements and all the administration and everything else, the management, the dollar per hour that's given to an employee is often smaller. Do you have issues with that sometimes when somebody's hired that they have a misunderstanding about those percentages?
You know, most of our majority of our employees are actually on our W-2, so we don't have that issue. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, in the cases where we do deal with the suppliers, they know how much they should be paid, and they know the benefits that they'll be getting into, that they'll be getting. So that promise is kept no matter what. So they respect us, they like working with us for that particular reason. And the payment is prompt, you know, no matter what, they get paid every 15 days, and they know it, and that's why they keep coming back to us for more work.
And I'm glad you brought this up, because I've seen an awful lot of people in the IT industry, right, that are similar kinds of companies. They're so afraid to tell employees and subcontractors the logic behind the numbers. And to me, that's just asking for trouble. If you're being secretive about why and how you pay things, you're telegraphing to your employees that you're secretive and that there's something else you didn't tell them. And that puts this wall up between them forever.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also insulting. It's making it sound like, you know, if you're a technical person that can put in a whole complicated system, couldn't understand gross profit, or couldn't understand why you needed to set aside some money for legal coverage, I mean, please, these are adults, you know, they're going to understand it. Doesn't make any sense to me that people duck that. But I get that way we're similar. Okay, so tell me a little bit about it. Venkat, go back. You're promising to people when they're hired that they're going to be smarter, they're going to be developed technically. And how do you do that? Because maybe your projects that you have in place, your customers want you to do essentially what your employees already knew how to do. So how do you promise that they're going to be smarter?
Oh, I'm glad, you know, you brought that point, Alona. I think that's one of the main reasons why people are actually staying with us. Mm-hmm. The main thing is, you know, apart from, you know, the way we empower them, the way we engage them, the main thing is enhancing their skill set. You know, we enhance their skill set both technically as well as personally. Let's take the first one, which is enhancing their skill set technically. Most of the times, as leaders, we have to show them the path. As leaders, we have to show them what's going to come, what's going to be hot in terms of technology down the road, whether it is, you know, 2 years or 5 years or, you know, probably, you know, 6 years. So we are in a hot technology, which is the business intelligence and data warehousing.
Right.
And within this domain, the technology is changing every day, and there are newer requirements, there are newer skill sets that the clients are demanding every day. We are partners with all the BI companies, you know, Informatica, DataStage, Cognos, Business Objects, and Teradata.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
as and when these companies are bringing out, rolling out new technologies, as their partner, we also get to learn those technologies, and our employees are sent to these technical sessions. And
do you have a manager who's over career development, and or multiple managers that are over the management of career development, so you know exactly who's due to go to which class and who has skills that they need to develop?
Yes, we have actually do this actually on multiple fronts. We believe taking care of the employees is actually it should be done by each and every employee in the company, right from the salesperson, right from the hiring, right from accounting. Everybody should be taking care of the employee. But in particular to the career, we have somebody called Relationship Management, RMT. This particular department actually charts out the career for each and every employee in the company, and that would be implemented by the person that hired the employee, and one employee would be there to take care of like one executive would be allocated to each and every employee that is coming into the company. So right from
so you assign mentors internally, is that what you're saying?
That's right. We allocate mentors, and they oversee the career development. They oversee actually the personality development of that particular employee.
Gotcha.
So
I'm on my eighth enterprise, and I think back over growing the strategic planning firm, and it ended up with six different offices around the country. And one of the things that was really difficult was as the clients needed. You know, you couldn't always control what the clients needed compared to what your employees wanted to learn. And so you'd have somebody that maybe wanted to learn more about succession, or they wanted to learn more about negotiating skills, or whatever it was. And it just didn't happen to come up in what the clients needed. So we'd have to find, you know, look for things that were going to keep their interest, expand their toolkit, so to speak. And it's not a one-to-one relationship sometimes, right? And how do you handle that with the number of people? You know, you have a lot of data management. You have high availability things. You have cloud computing. There's a lot of variety, but still, there's going to be something that an individual employee wants to learn that may not be available for them to take. You can't do upheaval of the team to put somebody in it just so that they could learn it, or do you? You hear what I'm asking?
Oh, is that question to Bhatt or me, Venkat?
Bhatt. Let's try Bhatt. I want to hear, you know, like if you have employees, you got 350, and you do an inventory about what they're good at and what they're interested in learning, and then you have this matrix when you think about it of who's assigned to which kind of clients and projects, so that they have a chance to practice and apply their learning. Then you've got these educational opportunities that are available, and sometimes there can be this gap in what the clients need and what your employee wants to learn. And you can't necessarily force it. You can't make all the stars align and everything be wonderful and exactly what that employee wants to learn be available. You follow?
Oh, very excellent question.
It's not that easy to manage all those parts.
I agree with you. However, first thing is, you need to have an extraordinary system that can be managed by ordinary people. And we have, being a technology company, we have an extraordinary system wherein we track each employee with his talent, strengths, weaknesses, requirements, his wants, and everything. Now, we have the customer database, and we also know what customer typically looks for. And we do the mix and match. And sometimes an employee wants to be in a new technology, and he doesn't want to go to this customer because that customer is offering an old technology.
Yeah.
And as long as you have the technology helping you, and as long as you have another customer in another corner, you don't know what's happening in your backyard many a times. You'll be scratching your head, and he is really... has become a consulting asset has become an obstacle because he doesn't want to go to this customer. At the same time, is your right hand in sync with your left hand? Does your right hand know what left hand is doing? So many a times, we could do just-in-time match of what a consultant wants and what a customer wants and then we just bridge the gap. I think half of the problem is solved if you do the bridging the gap assignment very well. And you got to be prudent about it. It's not easy.
Yeah. I think the account managers and the project managers are really underestimated in some companies, because working this puzzle of precisely what the customers want and precisely what the employees need for everybody to have energy matters. And you can end up with a wonderful employee stranded in a client because the client loves them. And now they're but the employee's getting tired of the work. And if you don't notice that, you know, then you kind of lose that energy of the employee. So adding new life and having some changes without it being too much commotion for the clients, that's science. There's a real science to that that most people don't focus on. They just take care of the clients, and as long as the client's happy and paying them, they figure that's enough, and it's not. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. I mean, are you going there because you're asked to go there, or you're going there because you want to go there? There's a big difference.
And the client can feel it. Oh, can they feel it when, you know, somebody just drags their butt in every day? I mean, they may not even say out loud, "I'm tired of doing retail," but they, you know, you can tell they are. Like, come on, who are you kidding? They're not looking with that face of, "Thank God it's Monday," you know what I mean? All right, now I need to take another break, and what I want to come back to is I want some stories of some people who grew into the management role, and it sounds like you took some chances to actually let people make some mistakes, and I want to hear how did you do that. So this is the Growth Strategist, Eldonna Ambler. We'll be right back with the co-CEOs of Edixoft Solutions. This is the number one best place to work in New Jersey. Ta-da! And it took some work to earn that, so we'll be right back.
Each week, I download The Growth Strategist into my iPod to listen to while I'm on the treadmill at the gym, because the host, Eldonna Ambler, knows what's on my mind as president of a $50 million company. With 30-plus years of experience as an award-winning entrepreneur and consultant, plus 6 years hosting her weekly radio talk show, she knows what she's talking about. And when it comes to acquisitions, succession, growth financing, franchising, going public, joint ventures, global product launches, you name it, and her candid interviews with the presidents of mid-sized company provide great examples and ideas.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Eldonna Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Eldonna Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist with Eldonna Ambler, and each week we rotate through different growth strategies, as you know, in different industries and geographies. And so today, you know, I'm interviewing the CEOs, co-CEOs of Edixoft Solutions. So we have an IT company here, the 350 employees. We're talking about United States, India, et cetera. These are, you know, major players. And, you know, what's great about them is think about what they're dealing with. With, you know, all the cloud computing and the data management and the business-to-business intelligence, and, you know, their clients are half life sciences and maybe the other half are financial and telecom. This is a high-demand business. And somehow they're finding a way to make this fun and retaining their employees. There takes a certain philosophy to make that happen. So what I want to know about, in particular, is I want to know how you've developed your middle managers, because especially in IT, what happens is folks love the technology, but they may or may not have enough background in actually managing. So when they get put in middle management roles, a lot of times there's a lot of mistakes. So Venkat, here we go. I want to have a specific example from you. When you think back over the last few years, give me an example of somebody that rose to the occasion or maybe made a mistake and somehow made good. Give me a story.
Sure. You know, in our IT business or in our IT services business, it's all about employees. So, you know, it was initially, we realized that, you know, it's not about us. It's not about Bhatt and Venkat. It's about the other employees. If there is a way that we could groom, if there is a way that we could bring the best out of other people, that would be the success of Edixoft. So, I'm still impressed by the way one of our employees rose to the occasion. This particular person joined Edixoft almost like 8 years ago as a receptionist, and she did not even possess any degree, college education. So when she came, she started doing all the HR activities, and slowly she got into accounting. And later there was a team that came under her, and she was made a team lead and then a manager. And
No kidding!
Eventually a director, and today this particular person is the vice president operations, which is equivalent to a CFO in our company.
Wow.
And
wow.
You know the best thing, she was chosen as one of the 50 best women in business in New Jersey 2 years
cool.
in a row.
That's
2009 and 2010. So
cool.
we and she was also chosen as one of the best CFOs in the state. So
now, did she go back to school? Did she get her degree?
Oh, we are
the
actually supporting her.
The receptionist hadn't gone to school. You can't do that. So how did she go back to school?
She's actually doing in a part-time and the part-time college and the part-time studies, and you know, that's what you know. She wants to have a degree, and we are supporting her in her request.
Yeah.
And that's about you know. Coming all the way from, you know, probably a receptionist to a CFO, that's the rise of one person. And there are many other people in our company.
Well, now let's go back to that one for just a minute. Because people, you know, they hear that stuff and then they go, well, wait a minute. How did you do that? You know, were there times when she wouldn't have understood the accounting and you had to give her extra time to do it? Or she wouldn't have understand how to be a leader and had to have a role model? I mean, give us some specifics. Sounds like she's a star. But what did the company need to do to help facilitate it?
I believe in what you just said. Initially, the company has to take care of the employees. You know, the company has to support an employee in making mistakes, and you know, we have to support them, and we have to give them that confidence that you know they have to learn from the mistakes, and they can afford to make mistakes. And slowly, the employee is going to mature, and they will start supporting the company. So it's about you know, give and take. You support them, they will support you down the road. And you invest in an employee, the employee will be faithful to the company forever. I think you know that's what we did, and we are lucky, we are fortunate enough to have so many of such employees with us. And we have employees that stayed with the company for 10 years, the age of the company is 10 years. So we have employees working with us for 10 years, 9 years, 8 years, and the average age of the employees here is close to 6 years. And we have
good.
Had that's right. We have had another case where one of the employees again, like, you know, joined as a you know, HR executive and office administrator. And today, the person is a network engineer. You know, he's taking care of all the networks in the company. And we have had situations where employees joined us right after graduating from the school, and as the students, as interns, they came to VedicSoft, they learned, they stayed with the company, and today, you know, they are actually performing some of the toughest tasks in the industry. They are actually taking care of the data management. They're acting as DBAs. They're acting as reports developers, and they're doing very, very good for themselves and for the company.
Now, as Venkat's talking about it, I think, Bot, when you and I were talking about recruitment, I'm curious about how do you spot a VedicSoft employee? In other words, is there some DNA or behavior in the interview or in the references where you can tell somebody who would fit your culture, or versus, you know, what do you let in, what don't you let in?
When we interview, especially, we want the candidates to speak. For example, if I'm interviewing you, generally your expectation is I have to ask you questions and you have to answer. But the way we interview, for example, I would say, okay, why did you come here? Well, I came to take up the position as a software engineer. Okay? And what do you know about it? Or how do you know about it? And then, okay, I found it on your so-and-so dice.com and then found it. So do you think you're the right fit? So, I mean, you make it very smooth flowing, but you let the person speak. The more he speaks, the more he talks about it, you could read the body language and then the person's attitude. And we want him to talk about what he knows about our company. Did he do his groundwork before coming for an interview? Does he know preparedness? And does he know how to project himself and his strengths? And is he positive? How does he take care of a challenging question? As you ask these connected questions, you would identify him in one of these parts being caught off guard. Then how does he come out of it? Because it's about selling too in interview, and is the person selling or not? Is he really selling and he doesn't have it, or he's selling because he has it? So you would know it. You would know it as you let him speak more and more, and you be a conscious listener. And then we don't hire the person on the one go.
I think even if you're a great interviewer, somebody can act well enough in one interview. It takes a few interactions, doesn't it?
Definitely. So we definitely do multiple rounds, and collectively we make the decision. Still, we do hiring mistakes.
So Venkat, give me another example of somebody that, maybe let's try a different one, and if it's a little awkward, tell me, I'll back off. But give me an example of a middle manager where all of a sudden it was getting away from them, and they had a big problem, and how did they handle it? Because not everything goes great. I don't want the listeners thinking, you know, everything goes so smoothly at your place, you never have a problem. That's just not true. Stuff happens.
Yes. I'll give you another example. Before I go there, I just want to add another point to what Bhart said. How do we hire people? The main thing is we look for the cultural match. We look for their values, their core values. Do their core values match with ours? And if they do, I think the technology and the experience and the aptitude could be taught or could be learned. The attitude is the main thing. I think that's what we look for when we are hiring somebody.
We had 7 A's that we would hire for a long time. I'm forgetting what all 7 are. But that attitude was one of the first ones, and aptitude. I mean, there's a brightness and an applied kind of mentality that people have. And actual availability to show up, you know, sometimes it's not dependability. It's are they available to work and mentally available to work and, you know, emotionally available to work. And that matters. And like the last one, all the way down at the end, might be that they're actually affordable. But, you know, because sometimes if they're that wonderful, it's so expensive you can't afford it. And I found I dropped the word affordable, because if you've got those key things of that aptitude and the attitude and all that, and they wanted to learn, they made you money. So the idea that they were expensive didn't matter.
Yes.
So I know what you're saying. All right, give me an example of somebody that had a problem and they stepped up and solved it, because life isn't all wonderful every day. You got issues you got to solve. Give me an example of one of your managers solving big problems.
Okay. I'll also give you another example where the manager was let go because, you know, the person did not really match up to our expectations.
Oh, cool. That's even better.
Yeah, we
give me your Donald Trump, your fired thing.
Right. There was one salesperson who was actually doing pretty well, and this particular person was the star of the company, you know, the star of the sales force. More than 50% of the revenues were generated by this particular person, and slowly there was a disturbing trend that emerged. You know, the person was actually grabbing the opportunities from other people, and the person was not letting the other salespeople grow, and that did not really match with our values. You have to work as a team, and you have to work as a company. If there is one person who is actually putting themselves or ahead of the company or ahead of their team, probably that's not the right way. So it was painful. You know, it was actually financially suicidal, because the 50% of the revenues was generated by one person, and we had to let that person go. But we were convinced with our decision. We were convinced with our values, and reacted strongly. And even though we took a dip in the revenues for one quarter, we were able to generate or regenerate the rest of the revenues and motivate the rest of the team. And you know what? The rest of the people till that time, they were ordinary performers. And after this particular person left, they turned into superb performers, like extraordinary.
That's what I was going to ask you, because sometimes when you get rid of a selfish person, you know, the other people say, okay, the boss is not in a coma, they're paying attention, and there's a relief that they count again. That's not fun to go through,
and,
before it does wake other people up and they can perform. That's really great. I got to take one more break, and then we need to do some contact information, but I need another story or two. This is the Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back with the co-CEOs of Vitixsoft Solutions, the number one best place to work in New Jersey. We'll be right back.
Please pay attention to the following message. Are you trying to maximize the resources that are available in your business? Do you think your business could benefit by having enhanced negotiation skills? If so, this message is for you. With more than 3 decades of negotiation experience, Greg Williams, the master negotiator and body language expert, author of the book Negotiate, Afraid, No More, has trained and assisted business professionals worldwide with their negotiation efforts. If you want to gain an edge in your negotiation with competitors, have your top people trained in current negotiation tactics, strategies, and techniques, and discover how to read body language to obtain greater insight in someone's real state of mind when negotiating, contact Greg Williams at 609-369-2100. That number again is 609-369-2100. By doing so, you and your business will be better positioned to win more negotiations and increase your bottom line. You can also read free articles on negotiation at www.themasternegotiator.com. That's www.themasternegotiator.com. Contact Greg Williams, the master negotiator and body language expert, today for your free consultation. The number again is 609-369-2100.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. And today we're talking to the co-CEOs of Vitixsoft Solutions, Venkat Urabundi and Bhat Dittakavi. And what's really cool about these, not just that they're co-CEOs, but I think it's kind of symbolic of their attitude of transparency and you know, building leadership and having people feel like family and being happy. And if you're listening to this and you say that that's trite then you're really not getting the point. The whole idea is that that can be a real promise. Business can feel like that, and it leads to retention of employees, and it leads to clients being happy. So I'd like them to give you their contact information for you to talk with them. You can ask a question if you want to apply to work there because you're one of those stars that's stuck behind a bad boss. Bhat, how would they get a hold of you guys? What's your contact information?
Anybody can reach any of us at 732-906-3200, and my extension is 207, and my partner's is 211. And anyone can email us at myself, Bhat, at vedicsoft.com, and my partner, Venkat, at vedicsoft.com.
And it's VEDICSOFT, right?
.com, correct.
And if you know my name, folks, it's easy to get me. It's aldona@ambler.com, A-L-D-O-N-N-A at A-M-B-L-E-R.com. And the toll-free number in the United States is 1-888-ALDONA. I have multiple enterprises, so I ended up with too many telephone numbers. So if you're dealing directly with me, that's the number you get. So I wanted to ask for one more story. Give me something where a mid-sized, middle manager, you know, was trying to learn things. It didn't go as smoothly as you thought. And how'd you handle it? Give me a good one. I want the people listening to this to know, you know, it's not the smooth thing and everything's hunky-dory fabulous. And you are tested sometimes. Give me a good one.
Hey, this is Bhat.
Bhat, you do it or is Venkat? Who's going to do it?
Let me go ahead. This is Bhat.
Okay.
Okay, we have this mid-level manager, and he's fabulous in his technical skills. He knows everything about the box. He knows everything, literally. And he's like a commander. He wants things certain way, and if they are not certain way, he would not budge with his team members, which
sounds
is
like
great for the business.
Guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which is great for the business. But there is, you know, on one side, we are servant leadership. We believe in servant leadership. On the other side, you have a tough master.
Yeah.
And there is a clash of culture here. I mean, there is clash of cultures here. And we try to bridge the gap. We try to bring the person midway to the bridge. We try to come this far, he comes that far. And we had tried good guy, bad guy, good cop, bad cop. I know, everybody does in business, unfortunately. You got to do that. And we tried all the measures and means of educating him the importance of understanding that we are human, the team members are human, we need to be personable. It's about appreciating 90% of the time and then giving critical input 10% of the time, not the opposite. It's about being transparent. And it's about letting your team member know what he is supposed to do versus letting him know that he's doing a great job. And the second has to be done more and more, because many a times, when an employee does a mistake, you know it, and he knows it. You don't have to tell him, don't do it next time.
Yeah. And
you just have to go and tell him,
really
I support you. I support you.
They feel really bad that they've got something wrong, so being embarrassed doesn't help. You know what I look at it as? It's like an internal consultant. And you don't want your accounting supervisor or your HR department to be insultants, right? You know, because they're serving, especially they're serving the internal customer of the billable people, the folks that are trying to do the work. And if every time you go to HR or admin or the accounting department, you're insulted about how stupid you are, what you did wrong, it's really demoralizing.
I agree. I don't know many managers why they do it. And unfortunately, many managers don't realize the direct report would take it that way, would take it as insulting. The manager said, I had been professional. I never said these things. No, you said it when you pointed out. Even though you professionally pointed out in front of many, that itself is insulting.
Yeah, and they focus on the content. You know, they were accurate. They were just pointing out facts, and they give you this innocent look like, yeah, but it was wrong, and you want me to do it right, don't you? So how long did you hang in there for that person and try to turn them around?
See, I will also tell you, over the period of time, we see some significant change.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the form that changed, but not the substance underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So we let the person do some constant development, and over the period of time, he seems to be doing what the culture wants him to do, not what I want, or not what my fellow co-founder wants it, but not what the culture of the company wants him to do. He seems to be doing it here and there, but behind the scenes, so in front of us, it seems that he's delivering whatever we want him to deliver, the culture wants him to deliver, but behind the scenes, the team members are facing the wrath. And I will tell you, it's just the clash of cultures. And another company may like his toughness. It's not that he is ethically wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, we are not having a bad apple. We are having a great person doing a great job, just not fit to be a manager.
Yeah. And how long did it take you to let him go?
It took really a long time because...
I thought so, because you guys are suckers for potential. You like turning people around. Do you have any regrets that you left him there that long?
I would say it's never late. Never late, and we feel proud that we want to change people and their personalities and their thought process, and then we want to introduce thought leadership. We want them to be taking their own space of speed to change their own attitude and personalities, and it's not easy to change you. You know, being in this business from 1970, to change you is not easy. So somebody is doing something right very well.
Yeah, but if I have regrets, it's been when I can tell somebody really didn't fit the culture for our clients or for our employees, and letting them stay too long, because it can also interfere with other people knowing that your culture is for real and you mean it and you're going to protect it. And, you know, having somebody who's too critical there for too long a time, you know, it's too expensive. It's compromising. So I don't know.
I agree with you.
Back on mine. Yeah, you know, I think I was a sucker for potential just a tad too long.
No, I agree with you. In fact, after the fact, there's none who regretted the decision in his team, and that itself is an indication we could have or we should have done this much earlier than we did.
And well, we get smarter and smarter and smarter, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you.
Well, folks, I'm really glad to have you on the program. Congratulations again on your well-deserved recognition as the number one best place to work in New Jersey. Ta-da. And I end the program, as I do every week, with a wish for the listeners. I wish for you accelerated growth with sustained profitability. And remember that the secret to that phrase is to reverse it. First, you need to know what drives your profitability. And in the case of FedEx Soft, it isn't just the technology. Can you hear it? It's an absolute commitment to core values of transparency, family, technical leadership, happiness. Those kinds of things aren't just words for these guys. They're hiring to it. They're managing to it. They have matrices to it. They're assigning their employees to the projects based on it, et cetera. You can hear it. So the second piece is you need to sustain it. So once you've picked a core strategy, you know, what is the key thing that really drives profitability for you? Can you sustain it? Then you can ask those fancy strategy questions about, you know, should you be doing more cloud computing? Should you be getting into high availability? Should you be looking at strategic alliances, joint ventures, ESOPs, blah, blah, blah? A lot of those strategies aren't relevant if you don't know what drives your profitability and can sustain it. Hear it? When you got the first three done, then you step on the gas and accelerate. Not before. You don't say, I want to grow really fast when you're not centered. This is the Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. Thanking you for listening. Signing out.
You've been listening to the Growth Strategist Radio Show. Tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, for a new, exciting episode.